Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Ooh-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us for the second hour of the show on this fine day in America. We are, and should be, proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. First, Army vet Danielle Engel will discuss her time in combat. Then Chaplain Scott McChrystal will share his time in the service, and General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month. Of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome Army vet Danielle Engel. She was a pilot, served in combat, and then she married a Marine. Anyway, welcome, Danielle.
Thank you. Thank you, Denny. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Danielle, when and why did you decide to join the Army?
Yeah, so I decided to join freshman year in high school, I would say, is when I began looking into it. I opted to look into it out of family tradition. My grandfather served in World War. My mother was a Gulf era veteran, Army nurse, and I also needed a way to pay for college. So it seemed like a good route to go. And I started looking into West Point and Naval Academy, and ultimately decided to do ROTC through the University of Virginia.
Okay. And you were a pilot. What attracted you?
Yes, yes. That actually happened by accident. I went into military intelligence, always wanted to, and commissioned as an officer in the Intel Corps, went to Fort Huachuca, came back and was attached to an aviation unit. Ended up working in the S2 shop and being the S2 kind of for on a temporary basis until they could fill the slot with a higher ranking officer. And ultimately, they did not have anybody that wanted to be both S2 and pilot. So they asked me if I wanted to go to flight school and be the S2.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought, well, that is not what I signed up for. And I don't know that I have the technical prowess to fly Black Hawk helicopters. But lo and behold, I went to flight school and I knew my stuff. I was very good at it. And I surprised myself in going through flight school and then deploying shortly thereafter I got out of flight school.
Isn't it amazing how our life has things that we never dreamed of as we were growing up and getting, you know, interesting things come along.
Yeah.
So you deployed. Talk to us about that.
Yes. So I went with my unit. They had kind of already gone. I was getting out of flight school and needed to get through the readiness levels. And so I went to a National Guard unit out of Nebraska to get ready through my readiness levels, flew with them for a bit. And then I met my unit in the MOB station down in Texas. And then we went to Iraq. So broke down some of our birds and they shipped on carriers is my understanding. And then our birds met us in Iraq, Qusar and Talil is where we were in the southern regions of Iraq. And that was during the drawdown operation. It changed from Iraqi Freedom to OIF to New Dawn. New Dawn is what it changed to. So we were in the New Dawn portion. Yeah, my memory serves me correctly. It's been a minute. Yeah.
But basically, you were flying a gunship. And you responded to whatever missions you were sent on, right?
Yes, yes, we did. So we were an air assault unit and we did have 50 cals out of each window. So it was a gunship and most of our missions were flying VIPs. We did have a couple of air assaults, but during the drawdown, yeah, I mean, we did. We responded to whatever we needed to respond to, but it was a lot of moving people, a lot of moving stuff because we were preparing to kind of, do the... What did they call it? The lights out tour is what we call it. Yeah.
You know, I spent a lot of time in helicopters in Vietnam. And I was always, it turned out nothing ever happened, but I was concerned about what a good target we were for people on the ground.
Oh, absolutely.
Only a couple of times did our plane ever get hit. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we got shot at a lot. What was your experience of that?
Yeah, ours was minimal. Also, we were in a Cobb, like I said, down south. Qusar, my flight company was, and it was a higher naval area concentration. There was a body of water flowing through there, and it was a shipping port area. But we did have some missions that got shot at. There was no injury, praise God, and We did have a lot of indirect fire at the Cobb, but there was never any damage to our birds or our people. Again, we're grateful for that.
Yeah, it was my observation that people on the ground, particularly untrained military people on the ground, tend to pray and spray, and sort of hard to hit anything that way, particularly something like moving. So, but it took me a while to figure out that that was true. Okay, how long did you spend deployed?
We were on it was supposed to be 13 months. It got cut short. It ended up being 10. We were out 10 months before we came back home.
Okay. And when you came home, what did you do then? How much longer did you serve?
Yeah, I want to say I was only in for another year, maybe two. And then I unfortunately got grounded, is what we call it. Not that Uncle Sam was like, you're bad, you're grounded. But I got pregnant. I got pregnant with our first son, and I got grounded from flight duty, and I wasn't allowed to fly anymore. And that's when I started looking at getting out and separating. It was really disappointing to learn that even in the perinatal period, so even before I was, you know, showing or anything like that, as soon as the Army learned that I was with child, I was done flying. Wasn't done, you know, serving, but I was done flying. And that was hard. That was a hard pill to swallow. So I started looking at separating. That took some time.
Yeah, does have to be very disappointing when you're used to doing something that's active and neat and you're good at it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you can't.
Yeah. And then learning too, right on the backside, after you give birth, then there's a period of continued recovery. And you got to make weight and all of those things. You got to be fit to fly again. So you have to pass flight physical in order to get back up in the air. So it's just like this significant chunk of time that I learned was going to be cut out of my flying career. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be a parent. Ryan and I, my spouse, who is a jarhead, and I are going to have to figure out how to parent without Uncle Sam. We probably need to shift gears here a little bit.
Well, so. I know your husband, Ryan. He's been a guest on the show and will be again. How did you two meet? He was a Marine.
Yes.
Woman, right?
Yes, he was. He was. So during the time between my training as an officer at Fort Huachuca and heading to flight school, I was at home for a time. My parents live in Virginia, and I grew up right outside of Quantico Marine Corps Base in Northern Virginia. So that's where he was stationed. And I had broken up with my boyfriend at the time, 5 years at the University of Virginia. And my best friend from home said, oh, I have somebody I want you to meet. You should go out with him. He's in the military too. You all would get along. And I thought, okay. She had actually gone on a couple of dates with him, and she said he was too nice for her. So we were at brunch, and she called him right then and there. She pulled out her cell phone and she said, I'm going to call him. And she called him, and he was so excited to hear from her because she had ghosted him. He's like, oh, it's so nice to hear from you. And she's like, I have somebody I want you to meet. And he was like, okay. He was on leave in Reed City, Michigan at his mother's house at the time. And he said, okay, well, we can go out when I get back home, which will be in, you know, maybe 20 some odd more days. So there was the suspenseful weeks of waiting. He came back to Virginia and we went out on our first date, and then the rest was history.
Isn't it amazing how things like that happen?
Yes.
It is indeed. And yeah, we're about out of time. What final comment would you like to share as a result of your time in uniform?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm grateful. I enjoyed it. It afforded me so many opportunities. And even with its hardships and the difficulty that I experienced in my time as a female and as a female of color, I'm grateful to have served our nation.
Well, apparently things worked really well because you and Ryan are just really neat people. And I'm glad to have met you.
I appreciate that. I'm glad to have met you too. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Diane. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for your great service to our nation. I'm delighted you could join us.
Thank you.
Is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Next, we'll talk with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. Troops, it's time to do some knee bends. Go halfway down each time. Do about 50 of them. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. We'll be right back. It's time to switch to Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you access to all three major networks. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support the First and Second Amendment, the sanctity of life, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Just go to patriotmobile.com/frontlines. Get a free month when you use the offer code FRONTLINES.
Veterans have a unique perspective on healthcare, foreign policy, and federal spending.
Concerned Veterans for America provides veterans and the military community a chance to share that perspective and drive change that will make Americans safer and more prosperous.
Want to join the movement and the thousands of activists in our grassroots army? Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Suppose you were forced to defend yourself or your family. This can happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. You will likely face legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there will almost always be an investigation, and you may find yourself in the legal system. U.S. Law Shield is here to help you through these events. Experienced U.S. Law Shield attorneys are ready to defend you 24/7, 365. To sign up, go to uslawshield.com and use promo code FRONTLINES. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show my good friend, retired Army Chaplain Colonel Scott McChrystal. He started his Army career as an infantryman, then became a chaplain, and ended up as his denomination's coordinator for military chaplains. So he's sort of done a lot of things. Welcome, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Denny, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Scott, give us a quick review of your time in uniform. When and why did you join? I don't remember that.
Well, I joined because my dad had been a career infantry officer. And when I got to college, I didn't really have any notions as to what I would do. I just kind of assumed that I would get into ROTC and give the Army a try. I figured I'd try for 3 years. And I did try for 3 years. I got out for a couple of years and then got back in and wound up with about 34 years.
And as I recollect, somewhere around 10 or 12 years, you decided to go to seminary and become a chaplain?
Yes. And I would say, I could say I decided, but I had an experience at an altar on a Sunday evening at church, and I was caught quite off guard by just sensing the Lord's, not his voice literally, but just speaking to my heart and telling me to get out and pursue ministry, not necessarily chaplaincy, but ministry. And when I told my wife about 6 weeks later, because I was afraid I'd made a mistake, she goes, "Well, I always wanted to marry a Christian, but I don't know, a minister." But we've traveled the road, and it's been an absolute delight.
And she's still putting up with you, right?
51 years worth, Denny.
Hey, you're doing well. We're at 58, so you're chasing us.
We're chasing you.
Okay. And all denominations who provide chaplains to the military have a, I don't know what you call them, but you were the coordinator for your denomination, right?
Yes. The official terminology is military endorser. The idea being that all military chaplains actually work for the Lord, first of all. They also work for their church, and they work for the particular chaplaincy that they're a part of. And interestingly enough, endorsers have just as much authority as, in my case, the Army. An endorser, if a person doesn't behave according to the right moral code and guidance, you can have a person off of active duty in a day. Of course, that was never any of our intents, unless there's just something horrible going on. It was usually the opposite, where we would be an advocate for the individual. As a matter of fact, I'm not actually the endorser anymore, but I am working on a couple of cases that are as challenging as any I've ever had, and hoping I can add some value to the situations.
Indeed. And it's my understanding, as particularly over the past maybe decade, that chaplains had a tough time because you are to stand up for your denomination's values, right?
Correct.
And there was a lot of pressure at times not to do that, for at least for some denominations. Do I remember that right?
Yes, and I would say particularly for Christian denominations, Denny, the fire's been heating up, and there's been a good deal of persecution, not like you see other places, but with the more rules and regulations, and frankly, just the dumbing down of culture as far as religion is concerned, it's making Christian chaplains have to be a lot more alert, I guess, to some of the pitfalls that they can fall prey to. It's a challenging world to navigate through.
But you are serving God, and that's your primary responsibility. And even really good people make mistakes on occasion, right?
Absolutely. And a lot of people, to include some chaplains, have a warped view on what their level of, how can I say, humanity is. We're all sinners, saved by grace. I'm talking about Christians. And chaplains have challenged. Nobody's immune. It rains on the just and the unjust. And a lot of chaplains feel like they need to be perfect. I think a better description, they just need to be real, and they need to obey the Lord as best they know how and try to love people. In the end, it's really not complicated.
You know, isn't that true? Serving the Lord is not complicated.
No, I would say people that try to either take over God's job or circumvent him entirely, they're the ones that takes more faith to me to not believe when you see all the evidence of what God does on a daily basis. And as the scriptures say, the heavens declare the glory of God. Every day I'm in amazement of what God has done, is doing, and what he says he will do.
Yes, brother, you're right. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Chaplain Scott McChrystal. Scott, after you got out of the Army, you started another ministry.
Right. I left the Army from West Point. We were there for several years and went to be the military endorser for the Assemblies of God. Then in 2019, I'd done that for 14 years and really felt the Lord wanted me to work in some other areas. So right now I work with several nonprofits like the Warrior's Journey, which is an amazing ministry that focuses on helping people to deal with their inner wounds. You know, you have great ministries like Wounded Warriors, and they deal with obviously the physical wounds. They do the other. But from the very beginning, we know that most people, whether it's from combat or not, deal with inner hurts and wounds. And it doesn't have to be a soldier or a sailor. It can be family members, because they go through trials and tribulations, which I think often are tougher than the military person.
You know, I have heard it said that perhaps one of the greatest causes of injury like that is abortion for the woman.
Absolutely. No question. I've had the, I'll say, privilege to work with women and help them before they actually decided to get an abortion, and they decided to keep the baby. And we certainly worked, my wife and I, with women who had the abortion. And boy, the guilt and the pain and the shame doesn't get dealt with easily.
And that's not for everybody, but that certainly is a cause. How does that work now? How do you reach out? And are we talking about what I call moral injury? Is that the same thing?
Yes, absolutely. Moral is injury is a term that's come on probably in the last 15 or 20 years. And it's not what I would describe as a well-defined word. It's got a continuum of meaning. But I would describe moral injury as something that really runs against the conscience of a human being. When you've done something or not done something, as Paul says in the book of Romans, the things that I want to do, I don't do. The very things that I don't want to do, I do do. So what a wretched man I am. Who's going to help me? Who's going to rescue me from this body of death? And he says, thanks to the Lord Jesus Christ. And it takes God's power, as you can imagine, to help people deal with levels of shame and guilt where, you know, they can't, like a bullet fire, you can't pull that bullet back into your chamber.
That's true.
It goes and travels.
It does. Scott, we're about out of time. What final comment would you like to leave for our listeners?
My final comment would be this, and it might sound political, but I don't mean it that way. I feel with this recent election, Trump is not a perfect person by any means, but I do feel like he loves this country. I think the policies, as we can kind of sense from across the land, are going to be better for the American people. And I feel really encouraged, as millions of others do, that we're going to try to get back on the right track, doing the right thing. And I think the American people as a whole want this. And God wants this.
Thank you, brother. I agree with that. Thank you for joining us today, Scott. And thank you for service to our God and our nation.
Well, Denny, thank you. It's always a joy to be with you.
Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, General Chris Petty will present the Battle of the Month that will open our weekly mailbag. Troops, I hope you're giving serious thought to buying some gold and silver to keep your future more secure. Check out Universal Coin. That's where I go. Check universalcoin.com. That's universalcoin.com. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Front Lines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm. To take a break, but stay in the area, I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Front Lines of Freedom promo code.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com, hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Denny Gilliam. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights, as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
Welcome back to Front Lines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gilliam. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And now it's time for the Battle of the Month. So, of course, we're joined by General Chris Petty. Welcome, bro. Thanks for joining us again.
I love being with you, Denny.
Chris, you're a great member of the team.
Thanks.
Start by giving us a quick review of your time in Mother Army.
Well, I graduated from West Point in 1987, branched aviation, did all the normal stuff, climbed that ladder of leadership and commanded some flight companies and did some battalion work, and actually got off active duty, joined the Colorado National Guard during the end of the Cold War, which is a story by itself. Anyway, all of a sudden I'm a battalion commander and I get called to go to Iraq and lead about 700 soldiers during the surge. And the unit did great things. So that led to some opportunities. I'm commanding a brigade, sending units to Afghanistan and Iraq. And then lo and behold, they pin a star on me and tell me to go to Bosnia, command a NATO headquarters there, which was fascinating. And then did some time at the Pentagon on the Army staff and finished out at U.S. Northcom in Colorado Springs. And since Colorado is my home, I was happy to fold it up right here and retire. So that's my life in the Army.
Hey, that makes sense. And wow, the battle of the month for this month is the Battle of Verdun.
Yeah.
World War One and the longest battle recorded that we know about in history.
Yeah. I mean,
and we didn't fight in it.
Right. We didn't fight in it. But, somettimes we sprinkle in good world history. You know that.
Sure.
because this was a monster. This is like the symbol of the disgustingly high cost of warfare. I mean, you can just picture Verdun, and that's why it's important for everyone to know. So I like to start with that. Why should we know this battle, especially since the U.S. didn't fight it? Well, as you mentioned, it's the largest and longest battle of World War I. I'm not sure it's actually the largest, longest in all of history, but I can research that one. But definitely World War I. And it was such a monster of destruction. You have almost 700,000 casualties with 200,000 men killed in these 10 months of just slugfest back and forth. So it's really symbolic of war too in that sense. So anyway, so this happened from February 21st to December 18th, 1916. You got to remember, World War I is in its second year. After the initial Schlieffen Plan went off the rails and France actually held out and stopped the German assault, everything became a stalemate on the Western Front. So the German general staff, the chief, General Erich von Valkenhayn, he gets a big idea. He says, we are going to pick a target that the French will do everything they can to defend. They will feed everything into this, and we will bleed them white, essentially. He planned this massive battle of attrition called Operation Gericht.
That wasn't a bad idea, was it?
No, actually, I mean, in hindsight, yeah, it's a horrible idea. But really, they had to try something else. There was no maneuver happening on the front lines. There was no tanks back in this point, really. There was no close air support, really. So anyway, not a terrible idea, but I'll explain why it didn't work out so well. So they picked Verdun. It was a key fortress in French history. It had all that going for it. It was already in a salient on the battlefield. It had limited road and rail lines on the French side with multiple road and rail lines on the German side. So for 2 months, Falkenhayn is building up massive firepower. The French kind of play into his hands because, you know, they're questioning the value of fixed fortification. General Joffre, who we've all probably heard of, yeah, he removed some of the heavy guns. He's even distracted planning an offensive at the Somme. So it's good timing for the Germans. Now, boom, 21 February, 0600 hours. German artillery unleashes one of the largest bombardments in history. Over 1 million rounds of ammunition, some phosgene gas, chemical warfare rounds, over a 6-mile front for 9 hours. Can you imagine the pounding?
Wow.
Yeah. So now 9 hours later, German infantry moves forward, even though, I mean, some French units were just vaporized, obviously, with that kind of firepower. But the Germans only sent 6 divisions forward. They thought they maybe pummeled them so badly, they didn't send a lot of mass downrange, which is actually a critical flaw. So the French started slowing the advance. Each side's rushing in reinforcements. The French end up holding them and rebuilding, and they bring in General Petain's Second Army. He makes a big difference. By the 28th of February, their advance grinds to a halt. And then it's a back and forth, each side feeding in reserves. And, you know, bottom line, because, you know, it's a give and take. But this massive thing becomes much more of a stalemate, and each side is feeding in manpower until the Battle of the Somme kicks off to relieve pressure on the French, and it works. The Germans have to reallocate forces up north to the Somme, which is a whole other huge battle, and the French push the Germans back to the starting point. So 10 months later, after basically killing 200,000 men and wounding another 500,000, this thing's back to its starting position. Isn't that amazing?
Incredible. I mean, the size of that and both the number of men involved and the geography and the time, I mean, that's big.
It's big. I mean, you look at Ukraine right now and you're starting to see similar numbers, but it's not playing out anything like this thing. I mean, this thing was massive firepower, and then, you know, the back and forth of the front line in big assaults. But yeah, warfare is amazing, and it's amazing that this actually happened because it's so symbolic of just the atrocious cost of warfare. But it did happen. And that's your summary.
Well, you know, just think about having to provide 1 million artillery rounds.
Yeah.
In a short period of time.
Right.
I mean, that's got me wondering. I mean, obviously they did. They knew how to do it.
But they did it. Yeah. I mean, trains full of ammunition. Full of ammunition, just rolling to the front line 24/7.
And there are factories behind them making more.
Yeah. The logistics, as you and I both know, logistics is the key to really long-term, you know, success in warfare. And yeah, the Germans were pumping it out and they had 2 months to stockpile it because the French were really kind of ignorant of what they were doing. So, but it didn't work. It didn't work. The French didn't push in enough forces fast enough after the breach. And it stalled out. That's bottom line.
And the bottom line is Germany lost the war.
Yeah, Germany lost the war. They couldn't sustain a two-front war. They were bound to lose anyway. Actually, after the Battle of the Marne, you know, the writing was on the wall when they had to fight a two-front war. But that's what the Schlieffen Plan was designed to do, but it didn't work.
Well, sometimes good plans don't work. Sometimes
right.
Not good ones do work occasionally.
That's right. It's amazing. It's amazing. So we had to cover this one. It's a monster. Yep.
This is Colonel Denny Gillen on Frontlines of Freedom. We're discussing the Battle of the Month with General Chris Petty. Chris, we got a minute or so. Chris, tell us about Battle Digest. It's a great option for folks who have any interest in the battles that have truly affected our nation and the world. So talk to us about that.
Yeah, it's something I hope your listeners are interested in. It's a very simple, distilled summary of historical battles. They're beautiful with maps and images. They're trifold brochures. I spend months researching and really slimming down the essential information of a battle so you can follow it easily. So just check it out. Battledigest.com is the website. You can peruse some samples and order one if you want, or you can subscribe and I mail one every quarter. But yeah, it's doing well. People love it. Historians love it. It's worth looking at, battledigest.com.
And it's easy to understand. So many maps and battle type stuff are a tad confusing. This is easy to understand, even for infantrymen like me.
Yeah, it's amazing how long it takes me to put the sequence of events of a complex battle into a real digestible form. It's not easy.
I absolutely believe you.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, thank you. Thank you for your great review of our history, well, our nation's history, our world's history, and for being a member of the Frontlines of Freedom team. I'm glad you're part of us.
Thanks, Denny. My pleasure.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You've reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. About 64 this time. I want your Ranger ready. Then, stand at ease.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Silver has increased 24% over the past 15 months and is a solid financial investment. Silver is projected to continue its rise and is nowhere near its 2011 high of $49 an ounce. So there's still a lot of room for investment growth. Call 800-UCB-GOLD or go to their website at universalcoin.com/Denny. That's universalcoin.com/Denny. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. I do some coin collecting. Universal Coin was the dealer of the year for the American Numismatic Association. It's a great place to go for coins and a great place to go to purchase silver and gold. I encourage you to go to universalcoin.com. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Send your thoughts to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Navy vet Carl really likes the way President Trump is acting to secure and protect our nation.
Carl, I totally agree with you. Go for it, dude.
And Navy mom Michelle really likes the way we're sending illegal aliens back home.
Michelle, we're doing the right thing the right way. This is good. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 20 February 1942, during World War II, Lieutenant Edward O. Hare took off from the aircraft carrier Lexington in a raid against the Japanese position at Rabaul, and minutes later became America's first flying ace. In February 1942, the Lexington sailed into the Coral Sea. Rabaul, at the tip of New Britain, had been invaded in January by the Japanese and transformed into a stronghold, one huge air base. The Japanese were then in prime striking position for the Solomon Islands, next on their plan for expanding their ever-growing Pacific Empire. The Lexington was to destabilize the Japanese position on Rabaul with a bombing raid. As the Lexington left Bougainville, the largest of the Solomon Islands that was free from Japanese control, headed for Rabaul, ship radar picked up Japanese bombers headed straight for the carrier. O'Hare and his team went into action, piloting F-4F Wildcats. In a mere 4 minutes, O'Hare shot down five Japanese Betty bombers, bringing a swift end to the Japanese attack and earning O'Hare the designation ace, given to any pilot who had downed five or more downed enemy planes. Although the Lexington blew back the Japanese bombers, the element of surprise was gone, and the intended Rabaul raid was aborted for the time being. O'Hare was awarded the Medal of Honor for his bravery and excellent aim.
Uh-huh. And on 19 February 1943, during World War II, 10 weeks after the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, President Franklin Roosevelt authorized the removal of any or all people from military areas, quote, as deemed necessary or desirable, end quote. The military then defined the entire West Coast, the home to the majority of the Americans of Japanese ancestry or citizenship, as a military area. Soon, over 110,000 Japanese Americans were relocated to remote internment camps built by our military in scattered locations around the country. For the next 2.5 years, many of these Japanese Americans endured extremely difficult living conditions and poor treatment by their military guards. On January 2, 1945, Japanese American evacuees from the West Coast were permitted to return to their homes. During the course of World War II, 10 Americans were convicted of spying for Japan, but not one of them was of Japanese ancestry. And in 1988, President Ronald Reagan signed a bill to recompense each of the surviving internees with a tax-free check for $20,000 and an apology from the U.S. government.
And on 19 February 1945, during World War II, Operation Detachment, the Marines, invaded Iwo Jima. Iwo Jima was a barren Pacific island guarded by Japanese artillery, but to our military, it was a prime real estate on which to build airfields to launch bombing raids against Japan, only 660 miles away. We began applying pressure to the Japanese on the island in February 1944, when B-24 and B-25 bombers raided the island for 74 days. It was the longest pre-invasion bombardment of the war, necessary because of the extent to which the 21,000 Japanese had fortified the island above and below ground, including a network of caves. We dispatched underwater demolition teams, frogmen, just before the actual invasion. When the Japanese fired on the frogmen, they gave away many of their secret gun positions. The amphibious landings began the morning of February 19 as the Secretary of the Navy, James Forrestal, accompanied by journalists, surveyed the scene from a command ship offshore. As the Marines made their way onto the island, seven Japanese battalions opened fire on them. By evening, over 550 Marines were dead and 1,800 wounded. The capture of Mount Suribachi, the highest point of the island and bastion of the Japanese defense, took 4 more days and many more casualties. When the American flag was finally raised on Iwo Jima, the memorable image was captured in a famous photograph that later won the Pulitzer Prize.
Iwo Jima was one heck of a fight. And on 21 February 1994, CIA operative Aldrich Ames was arrested for selling secrets to the Soviet Union. Ames had access to identities of all U.S. spies in Russia, and by becoming a double agent, he was directly responsible for jeopardizing the lives of CIA agents working all over the Eastern Bloc. At least 10 men were killed after Ames revealed their identities, and more were sent to Russian gulags. Maria del Rosario Casares Ames, Aldrich's wife, who had been a paid CIA source, also was charged with accepting approximately $2.5 million for providing highly confidential information to the KGB. It was the AIM spending that finally led to their downfall, because for many years, no one questioned their ability to buy expensive cars and homes on his government salary. Both Ames and his wife were later convicted. Ames was sentenced to life in prison. And that's military history for today. What would you do if you were forced to defend yourself or your family? These situations could happen to anybody, so it's important to be prepared. In addition to being the worst day of your life, you could face a large amount of legal bills. Even if you're in the right in a self-defense situation, there'll almost always be an investigation and you can find yourself in the legal system. It's just the way the law works. This is why U.S. Law Shield was formed. They're here to help people through events who never thought that would happen to them. With their Legal Defense for Self-Defense program, experienced attorneys are always ready to help you, defend you, 24/7, 365. To begin your membership today, go to uslawshield.com and use the promo code Frontlines. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, video posted by journalist Gabe Cortez on Instagram showed a man running down a road being chased by people in cars in Chatsworth, a neighborhood in Los Angeles. The video captured concerned residents taking matters into their own hands and tackling Alejandro Martinez, age 41, who now faces charges of arson. The residents mobilized after seeing Cortez trying to start a fire in the dry brush surrounding their homes. The residents held him down until the police arrived and took control. After a rash of deadly wildfires, California residents are finally saying enough is enough and are taking a stand against crime.
Thanks, Colonel. As a student of self-defense, I'm seeing this trend grow all over America. On a daily basis, I talk to people across the nation about growing crime rates, and people have finally reached their wits' end. They've had enough. When Americans stand up and pursue criminals and stop crime, those on the left call it vigilantism or justice by the mob. But that's just not the case. What these Californians did was legal and just and right. According to dictionary.com, a vigilante is any person who takes the law into their own hands, such as by avenging a crime. But that's not what these Californians did. The group witnessed a potentially deadly crime in process, and they stopped the man from burning down their homes. A vigilante would have pronounced judgment, then sentenced the man and carried out judgment on the spot. But these people didn't do that. They called 911, and the police came and arrested the man. He'll get a lawyer and a trial and have his day in court. If you ever find yourself witnessing a violent or heinous crime, here are some tips to follow. First, make sure what you're seeing is accurate. When we walk into a confused situation, we sometimes misinterpret what's really happening. Make sure you're seeing things correctly. Second, be safe about it. What these residents did is called a citizen's arrest. Only do this if you're sure you can pull it off. Violent criminals don't always give up without a fight. Make sure you have the power and the ability to restrain them without getting hurt yourself and without using unnecessary force. Third, know the laws of your jurisdiction as they vary from state to state. In this case, law enforcement agreed with the citizen's arrest because they also arrested the man. Frontlines of Freedom praises these Californians for standing up and protecting their homes and families, and we wish them all the best as they continue to fight against violent crime in their communities and their homes.
Well said, Skip. Our movie of the month is The Present. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, then go to the blog and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send your comments to me at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, Army vet John Hilton will discuss strategy. Then Janine will discuss supporting Israel through Sir L. Diane Raver from the Garden State Film Festival will present the movie of the month, and Liz Morris will discuss being a proud American. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or at Amazon. Please, Help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. Go to cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.